There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby. That's right. This man knows what's up.
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. Welcome back. Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Monday. Glad you're here. Phone number and the text line. If you haven't written those down or put them in your contacts yet, 343-0106, 343-0106. In addition, you can use the FM Talk 106.5 app to text us and call us. You can also leave a talkback message. If you already got the FM Talk 106.5 app, if you'll see that microphone icon on the front page, if you'll press that, lets you record a message, records it, emails it to this show and any of the other shows, 56 hours a week of live local shows here, and they can play it back on the air there. So when you send it to them, if you do not have the app yet, easy to get. If you're an iPhone user, go to the App Store. If you're Android and user like me, that's cool. My kids hate it when I say that. Cool Android users, just go to Google Play and look either place for FMTALK 1065. See our logo. That's our app. It's free. Download it and enjoy. All right. It's a lot of fun this hour because I got to visit with this man a little bit. His reputation precedes him, and people I think a whole lot of think a whole lot of him. So I was excited to get this man in on the show with the Mobile County Sheriff's Office. Sergeant Archie Niles joins me. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
We're talking about law enforcement stuff before we got started on the news break. Also, we did what anybody from Mobile does. So you're from Mobile. Where'd you go to school? That kind of stuff. And you were telling me.
I graduated from Vigor High School in 2000. Played football there. Also went to college for a little bit. Went to Auburn initially. Transferred to Jacksonville State. Unfortunately, when I was there, I tore my ACL.
Where'd you play? What position?
Running back.
Because I was going to do the guest thing. I was like, you remind me kind of a fullback build, too. But you ran the ball.
Yes, sir.
They never let me touch the ball. I played defense. I was nose guard. They said, do you see what that's like? You'll never know what it's like, Sullivan. But you did that. You're from Mobile. And that's what I think is important, too, to talk about somebody who's from here and then comes into the world of law enforcement and how that matriculation happens. So you're there, you bow out your ACL, you realize, okay, my sports career, that's other than playing kickball with the friends and stuff like that, is probably over.
Yes, sir.
Did you at that point go, what am I gonna do next? Or had you already been thinking about, were you a kid that, like, when you were 7 years old, say, I want to be in law enforcement? Or did it just happen later in life? When did that happen?
It kind of happened a little later. I was constantly working. I was dealing with people. Mm-hmm. And in 2008, my uncle was murdered in Pritchard, and that kind of lit a fire up under me. And so once that happened, I started thinking about law enforcement. And then where I'm at now, I'm in the major crimes unit, where now I'm able to speak for victims who can't speak for themselves. So I kind of look at it personally. I've been affected by the loss of my uncle in 08, and now I'm in a position now where I can speak for people who can't speak for themselves and get the family some type of justice.
Yeah, and when you talk to them, when you truly tell them you know what they're going through, you know what they're going through.
Yes, sir.
That feeling in 08 when you lost your uncle like that, was it, did you feel like confident that they're going to get the guy and do this, or did you not, you know, I'm sure you went through grief, but when you got to that point, where were you in that? Did you feel confident in law enforcement that they were going to find the...
I was hoping we would, but I know it takes more than just law enforcement. It takes the community as well. So I know a lot of blame do get pointed at law enforcement, but I think it's law enforcement and the community working together makes it more successful to get the people involved in these heinous crimes and bring them to justice.
How are we gonna improve that? There's been improvement, but how do we continue to improve that, Sergeant? I mean, because there's this disconnect, you know. I mean, and where some people are like, well, you don't talk to the cops. Whether they say it is like a snitches get stitches or that kind of mantra, or hey, this is the other one I've talked about. I've talked about it with the sheriff too. That if I say something, they're going to find out I said something, and I'm scared of the bad guys more than I am law enforcement.
Well, what I kind of do, I kind of take it case by case basis. So I look at it, if you interact with me and you mm-hmm. get a positive interaction with me, now that's one positive interaction you had with law enforcement. So maybe you'd be more willing to talk to another law enforcement official down the line because now you had a positive outlook and a positive outcome with law enforcement officials.
Now, it's about trust.
Yes.
Because I got to figure if I'm in the neighborhood where this happened, I want justice, but I'm probably scared that I could get retribution on something like this.
That's correct.
And this is interesting too. So you're talking about being major crimes and being a sergeant, but you came into this, and I've talked to our mutual friend the same say was correct here. You came into this on the end of the road for some of these people in jail. You came in corrections.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so this is a big deal. I mean, from a state level to a local level, I don't know if a month that goes by we don't have some story that they're trying to get more people into corrections, you know, locally or at a state level. I just had the sheriff from Baldwin County, and he talks about they're expanding their jail, and he's like sitting there going, "I'm trying to get more corrections, folks. I don't know if I can get them." But I mean, what those challenges there? I mean, for you going in, first of all, why was it a good path, and what do you think you can do with the sheriff's office to recruit more people to corrections?
Well, I started out in corrections, and I took it initially. I wanted to get in law enforcement, but that was my get my foot in the door was going through corrections. And I think it was great because while I was there, I got to build relationships with other coworkers or and even with the inmates. I had cases where I seen fellow former inmates that was incarcerated during my time in the jail. I was firm but fair.
Okay.
And by me being that way with them, they've been opened up to come to me when they see me now in my official capacity now and talk with me. That's okay. Helped also in the community where they see some guys come up and talk to me. Now, the other individual see this guy in the street talking to me. Now, they'll be more willing to come forward and say what they know. And that's been a challenge, too. Sometimes it's a lot of people in the communities that we policing. They don't want to say nothing.
Yeah.
But I kind of encourage them to say, hey, talk with me. I don't know where I can get you justice by you cooperating with me. Or maybe if you got crime around your neighborhood, you want it gone, let me help you.
Yeah, and now I'm thinking about it, with corrections, you got to see these people in a different light.
Yes.
Right then, and they remember you from back then versus the first time they see you, you were, you know, a sergeant now, but I mean, as you came up through the sheriff's department, they knew you before they knew you when you were standing in front of them with a badge.
That's
you
correct.
Know, the corrections, what is the formula to get more people into corrections? I mean, like if you're looking at somebody who worked in it and now you're a sergeant, I mean, what would you tell people?
You know, I tell people it's a great way to you can support your family. It's a good way you're doing something. It's a good opportunity. You can do something for your community because not only are you there to monitor the inmates that are there, you never know. You may be put there to give that individual that's locked up some type of word of encouragement or some type
really,
of guidance.
Really, you would do that?
I've done that.
Yeah.
So I can say it happens. I had a guy years ago. He was talking about giving it up. And I told him, I told him, brother, I don't know why you're here. God put you here for a reason. I told him, maybe it's some guy in the back that's lost, ready to give it up, but that's why you're put here to go reach him. And fast forward 2 days later, I saw that guy as he was leaving the jail. He gave me a hug and told me, thank you, because there was a guy back there ready to give it up. He talked him down. So wow. It's almost like, you know, what I task people with, if I reach one, I've done my task, but now I got to go get me another one.
Right.
So that's why I look. That's why I approach it.
That's not just law enforcement. That's almost religious. That's testimonial.
Yes, it is.
So as somebody who's seen it from corrections, now you know in your position dealing with these major major crimes, do you feel we're turning the battleship, so to speak? Do you think we're, you know, or what would have to happen for you to feel that way?
I think here in Mobile County, with our agency, I think we do pretty well with the public. But I think it's a task when you look at nationwide the distrust with law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to take a time. I believe in peer to peer accountability. That's why I task even reaching out to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to the kids in high school. I make so I'm approachable. They'll be more willing to come to me if they see me out and about, or if they're in any trouble, they'd be willing to come talk to any law enforcement official, because I've built a relationship with them. Then maybe they can take that relationship with me and go trust another law enforcement official if they need it. So I think it's very imperative that we target the schools, even elementary, because you'll be surprised how many kids that we come in contact that are afraid of police.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the parents tell them, hey, the police is going to get you if you do something wrong. Well, I kind of flip the script on the parent, and I always tell the kid, hey, I don't arrest kids. And use that, bring a big smile on their face. But I do that because I don't want that kid to be afraid to come to me if he needs me. And
right.
I want them to be willing to come forward to any law enforcement if they need help, because that's what we're here for. We're here for the public.
It is, but it's like what I hear from you is building that trust.
Yes.
And you can come out and say, oh, you ought to trust me. But until you show me something, and you and I are like, think of the age, we're 10 years apart in age. For me, it was just kind of, law enforcement was two-dimensional when I was young. It was, my parents kind of told me the same thing. You screw around, you can get in trouble. But it was two-dimensional. And I was just like, there's law enforcement. It wasn't negative, it wasn't positive. It was guardrails that were in there for society, right? Mm-hmm. You got to act right because of this, that, and the other. To looking at it now, past your generation, my generation, go younger, now it seems with some kids that it starts off not at neutral, but it starts off negative, right? That you have to get from the negative just to get back to neutral.
You're right.
You know, it's a challenge.
And then you got the stigma where it's not cool to be the police.
Yeah.
And so I always tell someone, if you want to be part, either you're part of the problem or you're part of the solution. So I always tell them that too. So I said, either you're going to be with us or you're against us. So I said, if you want change, you got to do something with change. You got to get active. Can't just sit on the bench. You got to get in the game.
Right.
So depending on who I'm dealing with, I put it, like if I got some young kids that play ball.
Mm-hmm.
So I put it to them that way. Hey, as long as you sit on the bench, you can't never get in. The coach won't know how good you are until you get off the bench and get in the game.
Right.
And you'll be surprised. I had a kid back in December. I actually was the officer on the sideline with him, so I watched him play. And I was talking to him, and as we continued to talk, he told me they nicknamed me Coach 12.
Coach 12, you're the 12th man.
Well, 12 is the symbol, that's the number they call police officers.
Okay.
But they nicknamed me Coach 12, so I thought that was pretty cool.
You'll take that.
Yeah, I'll take that.
And it's, coach is good because it's kind of a life coach too.
Yes.
Being there. It is interesting too to think about where we sit in our city and who listens to whom. And, you know, we could talk about this that, you know, I wonder, a friend of mine worked with Men United Against Violence. We do things, but there's a lot of the discussion how we help. And we go, hey, I'm a white guy. You're a black guy. We're talking to these kids. And he's like, listen, your message is still, you can be a white guy and have the message, but there is still something different too, right? With, you know, I pray that it goes away every decade. It gets better. But I mean, you're a black guy, I'm a white guy. You can talk to a group of kids that maybe might not listen to me. Or, I mean, what do you think about that, like interaction with the community?
Well, I take it regardless of where I go. I credit myself that I am versatile.
Yeah.
Because I tell people, you know, I don't care what color you are. We all children of God.
Correct.
And that's why I look at it.
Yeah.
And by having that approach, and I teach my kids that same approach to that. We know color's there, but we don't see color.
Right.
And so you treat everyone like you want to be treated. And
bingo.
I think that's the ultimate goal. If we do that, we'll fix all the problems.
Sergeant, we learned that in kindergarten. We just seem to forget it.
We'd have.
You know, and I just wonder, as this mediator for you, once you've got their confidence, then you introduce them to somebody else. That's what I'm getting at long term, and say, hey, this guy's all right. This gal's all right too.
Yes. And typically what we've been seeing now, and we've been working in Pritchard for a good little bit of time now, for about almost a year now, after helping out in cases. And when we first started going over there in those areas, we was getting a little pushback. People didn't want to talk to us. But now they're seeing us more. They're just one community that starting to see a little bit change, which is great. But now they're more willing to come forward and talk to us and say what they know, because, you know, a lot of people are afraid. If I talk or get seen talking to the police, something's going to happen to them. But I reassure them, I say, hey, the conversation you have with me, if you saw something, I need you to testify in court. And I explained the process to him. I said, but if we want to stop the criminal activity around your neighborhood, this is what we got to have happen. And so I laid online. Sometimes they're reluctant to come forward. Then sometimes if I keep picking at them, just keep giving it to them, like how we got. I said, if we had a murderer, nobody won't talk about him.
Mm-hmm.
But I went back, I reapproached and said, hey, this guy did this, this, and this. So if you can communicate with me what you saw, what you seen, what you heard, or if you know someone who has direct information. So it takes a little bit back and forth. But once they gain our trust, people are more reluctant to come forward. And
well, that's what it sounds like, because you didn't say that time we went to Pritchard. You're talking about a duration of time.
Yes.
So if you go, obviously just spending the time I've spent with you already, I know you're a guy that lives by your word. So you tell somebody something, you do the thing, you come back, you didn't just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
But there has to be, I mean, how are we going to mass produce Sergeant Niles? I mean, we got to have a lot of y'all.
Well, I want to pat myself back. We got a team.
He should, y'all. You look at it, Google his record.
It's not just me. It's I can look at my unit as a whole, the way we operate, but it's not just our unit. It's the sheriff's office, the way we approach it as a unit. So if we can take law enforcement as a whole to take a different approach, make it personable sometime.
Right.
Because I know sometimes if it doesn't affect you directly, you don't care nothing about it. But if you make it personal, you know, okay, I feel that person's grief. I can see mm-hmm. where they're coming from. And that make, because we pride ourselves on giving 110% regardless of who you are,
right,
what you look like, what kind of background you come from. We're going to give you 110% what we got.
I mean, can only imagine, you know, that process. It is. It's a building. And at the same time, you've got to do an investigation.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be, y'all are, you know, we watch the TV shows about what kind of the stuff y'all do. It's amazing. At the same time you're doing that, you're building trust. There's like a human side of it, you know, that's, you know, that's beyond just, it's this law enforcement measure. I'm finding evidence. I'm figuring out what the code says.
Yeah, it's a team effort, because, like, when we come out on scenes, we get there. Usually we have somebody from patrol there already. They didn't sit there and got the scene secured for us. Then we have our crime scene investigators. They're working. We work along hand-in-hand with our crime scene investigators. So sometimes if I see something a certain way, I may bounce some ideas off them, see what they're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately when we get to the end result where we're both seeing the same thing, but sometimes certain cases are a little more complex than others, so you utilize your team around you, because you really would need that. So me and you going to see it two different sides of you. So
mm-hmm.
your view is not completely wrong. Mine's not completely right.
Right.
But put it together, we put the pieces of the puzzle back together, and we figure out who did what.
Now, well said. But it is, I will give you this, having been lucky enough to be around people that have that kind of brain, like the sergeant here, y'all do see things. For a civilian in law enforcement, I can look at a picture or a scene, and I see this, and then y'all go, well, did you notice this, 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 and this? There's something about your brains that, you
yes.
know, is something. It's a real pleasure to meet you, and once again, people listening to us today, whether they're older and thinking about, you know what, it's career change time, or we're talking about one of those young men or young ladies out there, the idea is the track in corrections, there's opportunity, and from there, matriculating into the to being a deputy.
Yes, because I started in 2010, started in corrections, did 4 years, been on the sheriff office, SO side, now sworn for 10 years, total 14 years in law enforcement. So it's a very rewarding job in the end, because if I can encourage any young man or young woman, if you feel like you want to, if you're not happy with things going,
mm-hmm.
let's get in the ball game and just be part of the solution, not the problem. Because I feel if more people get in and do it the right way, we'll start seeing a change in law enforcement where the community won't be reluctant to talk with us. They'll get that, we can gain that trust back like it used to be.
We need every new version of Sergeant Niles we can get. Thank you for what you've done for our community. Thank you for being here on the show. And best of luck going forward. And don't be a stranger. Come back and see me.
Thanks for having me.
All right. I'll be right back. More of Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 128 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along, and really enjoying the conversation with Sergeant Niles, and so much to talk about. I want to go to the text line quickly here, Sergeant, before we go to the news and we'll come back. Does Mobile County Public Schools allow the Sheriff's Department into the schools, so I know you were talking about that, to speak to kids about possible future careers?
We have deputies now working in the schools.
Which has been a godsend. There's so many parents were so happy when that changed.
Yes. Yeah, so they're building relationships now by us having deputies in the school. They have been able to interact with the officers while they're at school. So
you make sure it's the cool deputies the kids will like. I mean, when y'all go through, I don't know if the sheriff would talk.
We got pretty good guys and girls on our squad, so we do pretty good. But that gives the kids the opportunity to interact with law enforcement. So maybe that may be what sparks their interest into a career in law enforcement down the line.
Yeah, if you can see somebody, right, and see them doing their job.
Yes.
And that person's kind of cool, or you like that person, then that probably is a better tool than saying, okay, everybody come in the auditorium, and Sergeant Niles is going to sit here and do a presentation, if I can hang out and see them do their stuff.
Yes.
Because it is a question. I don't know if we did a questionnaire. When I was kids, I mean, talk about when they ever told you second grade or whatever, what do you want to be? I want to be a police officer, or I want to be a fireman, you know, I want to be a soldier or something like that. I don't know if we did those surveys now, it would be the same.
Most of the social media stuff, the kids are way different from the way we grew up. I know when I was initially, I thought I was going to play football, but yeah, life happened.
Yeah, but you did play it at the next level. I thought for about CYO ball, I thought I was going to play the next level, and then by high school, I figured out I wasn't. Hey, can you hang on a second?
Yes, sir.
All right, coming back with Sergeant Niles. More right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right to 135 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Time to check in. Let's check in with my buddy David McCrary at LCM Motorcars. Get the week started. Inventory, how's it looking?
Good. Week and the month. Let's.
Oh yeah, that's right.
We got everything looks good. We've got a really good inventory. We're probably going down to South Florida next week and see if we can pick up some fresh stuff. So if there's anything anybody's looking for, any particular stuff, just let me know. Give me a call at the office or something. Come by and see me. Other than that, I mean, inventory that we've got in stock is really good. Financing's good. I can't complain.
You know, you're talking about going and finding. You've done that for me. Finding those vehicles, y'all, it's really easy because once you kind of give David a description of what you're looking for, he's going to show you, like, you're going to see a bunch of different vehicles that, you know, may be the perfect one, or you're like, okay, I like that, but can we do this one other tweak? And then you find it. It's worked great for us.
Yeah, and it's not everybody wants to take the time to do it, but I enjoy doing it. You know, it's a hobby. You know, you look at cars all day long. Some people wonder how you don't get tired of it, but just what I've done all my life, and it's fun, and we'll find you the right color, find you the right equipment, find you the right price.
I can guarantee you he's good at it. It's his hobby, and he's good at it. So tell folks how to find you.
We're at Highway 90 and Plantation in Theodore. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. You can give us a call at 251-375-0068 or go to the website, lcmmotorcars.com. And hey, Sean, let's talk about one more thing right quick. Tax returns. Make sure if you're looking to use that as a down payment, do not deposit it in your bank account. Bring it to us. If you don't want to put the whole thing down, we'll give you the difference back, and it'll be a check that you can use that day.
Yeah, people will say, but why do that? Tell them why do you do that?
Most all checks that you put in the bank, any bank is going to take advantage of a situation where they can earn interest on your money, and they're going to hold that money for 7 to 10 days. If you bring it to us, we'll make those checks good today. You can use that as your down payment today and not have to wait to get it. So get with us. If you got any questions, come see us. Give us a call. We'll explain it to you.
See, a pro tip there from David. I appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
All right, buddy. Have a good day, Sean.
Hey, you too. There goes David at LCM Motorcars. And I'm probably going to get in trouble here as I've held law enforcement over a longer time, but it's fine. Just getting to know Sergeant Niles and enjoying our conversations on the air and during the breaks. And I want to go to this one. This is a tougher part of what you do. And you had mentioned to me your work with CAC.
Yes.
Which is?
Child Advocacy Center.
Yeah, Child Advocacy Center. These children that have had, we talk about doing everything you can for the fundraisers and all that, but I mean, they're kids, it's tough to hear these stories.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it's, you know, and you're a dad, and you hear these stories. I mean, you probably give them, the kids probably get smothered with extra hugs when you come back from some of that, you know?
Yeah, it's tough at times, but when you have to hear some of these horrific stories, that's how these kids are being affected, whether it's physical or sexual in nature. It hits home. It makes you look at your approach totally different, too. And then you want to fight harder for these kids who sometimes don't have nobody to fight for them. So I have two pretty good investigators at CAC right now. And they do a pretty good job on investigating cases and try to get these cases moving forward to get these people in prison. That's the ultimate goal.
That's right. Yeah, and put them in there and let's not see them.
Yes.
And that's something that, you know, I talked about during the break, and I've said this over time when these cases come up and you hear these horrible things that have happened. It's a naive idea, but I think they're going to get them all. Now they get, you know, just, and it's, and there's just another one and another one.
Yeah, it's frustrating, but one way I look at it with the guys and girls that commit these crimes, and then when they do get out, they have to register. So that's a good tool we have by them having to register. And they also give them restrictions and guidelines on where they can stay and who they can be around. So if they're in violation of those, any of those restrictions, then they subject to go back to jail.
Do y'all run into that? That people violate it?
Yeah, we see a lot from time to time where individuals get picked back up. We have a SORNA unit who's actively going after these guys and girls who are in violation.
You talk about Major Crimes Division too. You're doing those big cases. Think about the violent crime and the gun crime.
Yes.
How are we going to stem, in your opinion? Somebody, because you're frontline. How are we going to stem this? How are we going to change things? You and I can sound like old guys and go, back in the day, you know, we'd have slugged it out, right? But that's just remembering yesterday. What do we change today?
It's going to take a little time. I talked to my son about it, peer-to-peer accountability. Maybe if he can get something. So sometimes it's harder. Even they'll listen to us, but typically another child will listen to another child before they listen to another adult.
100%.
So I talked to my son about, hey, doing it the right way. Even with guns, I teach him gun safety, and that way he know it's not a toy. I taught him at a young age, guns hurt. Well, his guns hurt, my guns kill. We had the little Nerf guns. So right. I teach him to respect the gun. A lot of these guys and girls that we see in our investigations, you know, that's their first result. They go to a gun. But, you know, I try to teach my kids, and hopefully I can reach other kids where, hey, love your brothers and sisters like you, and treat your people like you want to be treated. If you have a disagreement, I try to encourage the kids when I talk to them, hey, a gun is not always the answer.
Yeah, and it's, you know, but you and I can probably think back, and you might not have scrapped, but, I mean, guys I scrapped with, that I see them now, and they got families and kids. I mean, it's like, oh, we got to fight, okay. Everybody's still here.
Yep.
Right? But also changing this idea that I've watched it and heard stories that the bullying, there's always been bullies since the Bible, there's been bullies.
Yes.
But in a case where, like, the bully now gets a gun, right? Or the neighborhood bully or the school bully, they get a gun. And now that child, instead of going and lifting weights and trying to be ready for the fist fight, they think they've got to go get a gun now too because the bully has a gun. And it just seems like this arms race, I guess, to escalate.
Well, I had a kid not too long ago. I challenged him. I said, hey, put the gun down, pick up a Bible. I said, that's the most powerful weapon we have, but we don't use it most of the time.
Would change society. Yeah, if everybody had one of those in their hands.
And so I encourage them, like a lot of kids.
But they're gonna say, Sergeant, let me play. Let's say we're role play. The sergeant, they're gonna say, Sergeant, I agree with that, but that doesn't mean anything right now because the bully out there's got a gun.
Well, like I tell them, I said, well, doing it God's way is hard. It's easy to go wrong, but it's harder to go right. So I just tell them, stay strong in your faith and trust and believe God that He will make a way. And doing it His way, you'll get a better outcome in the end.
That's true.
And so I encourage a lot of kids that when I talk to them, if they don't know God, get to know God.
Yeah. There's not going to be, you're never going to go, well, I got to know God. And that was, you know, they're not going to say, but that was a negative in my life.
Never say that.
That's for sure. And I appreciate meeting you, and hopefully we get together again soon.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for the work you're doing for the people of Mobile County.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Sergeant Niles, and yes, I think we will talk again soon. He's a very interesting man and part of the Mobile County Sheriff's Department, the kind of people we have watching out for us out there. Remember, encourage folks to, if they're looking for a career path, something Sergeant Niles mentioned, getting you through into corrections, from there going further into law enforcement, a great option. Coming right back, more of Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 148, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you along. I'm looking forward to tomorrow's show. And some of the guests booked here. April Marie Fogle is going to join me. Also on the way, my man John Sharp. And get later in the week, too, that it's been too long since we've had John Sledge on, historian and author extraordinaire John Sledge. He's got a new gig in the city of Mobile. We're going to talk with him about that later on in the week as well. So people have been saying, hey, we hadn't had our history update from John Sledge. That's coming up as well. All right, let's grab some text here. And this is back to the tariffs. Hey, have y'all seen what in your shelves? And I'm not saying this like rhetorically, like you don't have them, but what in your shelves that you're buying now that you feel or is going to be something that is going to go up so much in price that it's going to be a thing you can't do, or you can't replace it with another product that's the same, you know, the same way, right? And it's tough for me because I've talked about this over time and how I'm not 100%, you know, I know it ruffles some feathers. I'm not always 100% in agreement with Trump. I've said, you know, usually about 85%. And some of the things in the days before were about tariffs. And that's just because I kept my nose in books that, and, you know, listened to a lot of Milton Friedman and people that told you the tariffs were bad for the American people in the long term. But that's also if you were dealing with an even playing field, right? If you had other countries that were doing it the way we're doing it, and didn't have their government is so involved in their business, then what Milton Friedman in the textbook said back then made sense. But the problem is that's changed. That's changed big time. So are we fools to say, hey, we're going to just take the deal being given to us, whether it's somebody like Canada or Mexico or, like I said, the big game, the one against China, are we fools to believe that we should continue to do it the same way and let us continue down the wrong path? Does this last long? As I pointed out, I don't think so. On some of these countries, some I think it's a bigger deal. Like I pointed out last week, Colombia, right? Had the big hubbub about Colombia. That got worked out in, I don't know, less than 24 hours time. Mexico. Now this is going to be, I thought Mexico would be one of our big ones here. But look at Mexico. They said, okay, can we delay the tariffs if we put troops on the border? Okay, well, we have Mexican troops going to 10,000, and you can, you know, a fair discussion to say whether they're going to do anything really to stem the tide of the drugs or not. I'd wait and see, right? And if it's going to make a difference out there. But they are doing something. Now, Canada, different story. They're going to, they're complaining about, you know, that it's unfair. And Dalton had a cut earlier. He's playing for me, and I think it was one of the people trying to be the new prime minister there, because, you know, Trudeau's on his way out, and had something to the effect of saying, chill out, United States, chill out, just chill out. Well, yeah, because they're getting a good deal here, right? Of course they want you. Maybe I can get that cut before we finish up. Yeah, here it is. Okay, so this is, thought this was interesting. This is the attitude coming here from Canada. So this is a candidate. Do we have it? Maybe we don't have. Okay, I thought we had that cut. But if not, we'll get it on tomorrow. No, here it is. Okay, here it is. It's cut two. All right, here we go. So this is Canadian PM candidate Chrystia Freeland, and here's what she has to say about the United States. So here's her idea of what we should do. This is about the tariffs.
Americans have to understand how hurt and frankly how furious Canadians are. Our sovereignty is being challenged. And so, yeah, regular Canadians across the country are coming up with ways to stand for Canada, to fight for Canada, to defend Canada, but mostly to say to our American neighbors, guys, just cut it out. Just stop it. This is a terrible idea. And yes, we are going to use all the tools in our toolbox. You mentioned a little bit earlier how the United States depends on China, critical minerals and metals that you need for semiconductors, that you need to build electric vehicles. Well, guess who also produces those? Canada. You depend on us for a lot, and we are happy to work together, but it's got to be a two-way street.
So just chill out. Listen to what she says. It's got to be a two-way street. We agree. It does need to be a two-way street. Canada's been getting a great deal for a long time, and now it's just an idea of like making it a two-way street. And she's telling you Americans to chill out, on this thing. I have a feeling, too, she's talking about the raw materials that the United States needs. We could actually produce those here inside the United States, majority of them, which I think there'll be an increase if you look at some of those companies doing that. You can see what their stocks are doing today. It's been pretty interesting to watch them rise. Same time, if we're this huge market for these Canadian minerals, and then where are they going to sell them? Oh, yeah, the United States. And by the way, traffic update, appreciate this. Charlie on the text line said the lights are not working on Highway 181 in Daphne, heading south starting at Champions Way. So lights are out there. We'll get an update from Kane in the traffic department on that in just a little bit. But that, once again, 181, thank you, Charlie, 181 south starting at Champions Way, right? Other texture. Leo said, did I see the renaming of, I've seen the memes out there. After the Gulf of America thing from Trump, the idea to rename Mobile Bay, Mardi Gras Bay. I don't know. I like the Mobile Bay. I'm going to stick with that one. I told you, I think that whole, the you want to look at your conspiracy, I think it's Big Map that was behind the renaming of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. Think about how hard it is to sell new maps, right? Stuff has been the same for a long time. Think about the business if you could get all the maps changed out there. And somebody asking, what about, somebody asked us earlier about Canadian troops. I don't think they're massing Canadian troops on the border to work out a deal like Mexico did, but it's going to be kind of a wait and see. And I think this is not as easy as Colombia in the negotiation, but I do think this gets resolved rather quickly. And also on the steel side, did you see this? The Nucor. Now, this it's interesting, too, to think about the aluminum recycling plant, Novelis plant here. And this story, not about them, but I was wondering in the metals world here, said the CEO of the largest steel producer in the United States, Nucor Corporation, endorsed President Trump's tariffs on China, Canada, and Mexico. This quote here says, Nucor applauds the first steps taken by President Trump at his America First trade agenda, said Leon Topolian, the chair and president of Nucor Corporation. He said, we look forward to working with President Trump to enforce our trade laws and strengthen American manufacturing. Okay, so there will be, while there's going to be, you could argue this, like, okay, specifically your Molson Golden or whatever is going to be more money from Canada. What about the people who work in the steel or the metals world there, if they can make more money and take home? So the company's CEO recently was on CNBC with Jim Cramer, who's a nut, by the way, and celebrated Trump's upcoming tariffs as tools to, quote, end currency manipulation and the subsidization of steel coming from to the U.S. from abroad, which is, I mean, what you've seen, like China. We're talking about China here, too, other countries, but China, that would back to me talking about changing from that Milton Friedman model. When China subsidized steel for so long and had steel come in here, it's so cheap that American companies couldn't compete with it. China was doing that to take away the market share, and then they could raise prices. So something that resets that, I'd rather not have the Molson Golden, right, or the Canadian bacon for a little bit to reset that. So there we go. It's tariffs, and there'll be another, there's going to be more of this. He hasn't laid out all the places that are going to battle with the United States on tariffs. And like I said, I think there are some tougher games and there's some easier games. I think right now China is still that big game out there. How we're going to work that one out long term, I don't know. But for sure, we've got a win for Colombia, a temporary win with Mexico, and I believe a win within the next 2 weeks for Canada out there. And, oh, thank you. My friend Patty just said, so this is working here. Charlie said the lights were out. And then Patty, my friend over at Allegri, Marcus said the lights are working at 181 and 64. So there's your update, traffic-wise. All right, Paul Feinbaum show on the way, talking about the football analogies. Paul on the way in just a couple minutes. We'll do it again tomorrow. Reminder, too, if you've not downloaded the FM Talk 106.5 app, it's out there and waiting for you. If you're an Android user or an iPhone user, go check it out at the App Store or Google Play. Just look for FM Talk 106.5.